Reformed Church.
In verse number 1, Psalm 57, David's coming from a perspective, obviously, that these things have not occurred yet, right? So he prays in a way that it's very evident that you can tell it has not happened. Because he says, "Be merciful to me, O God, be merciful to me, for my soul trusts in you." This is the New King James Version. It says, "And in the shadow of your wings, in the shadow of your wings, I will make my refuge until these calamities have passed." Verse number 2 says, "I will cry out," and sorry, this according to the note, it does say that the psalm was written when he had fled from Saul into the cave. So, you know, he was going through some stuff, right? But the Lord was obviously ministering to him big time about Jesus and how he could trust in him and what the Lord would do for him if he just put faith, right, in that salvation. So verse number 2 says, "I will cry out to God Most High, to God who performs for me." There is added words there that said all things, but it does appear to say to God who performs for me or performs all things. In other words, the work is his. Verse number 3, he says, "He shall send from heaven and save me." That's really beautiful, right? "He shall send from heaven and save me." So here's David speaking really either by the Spirit of God or by revelation, but he's saying, it's just so right? He's asking the Lord for help, and he says as a statement, "He shall send from heaven and save me," right? Some people could take that, unfortunately, to mean like, oh, like God's going to send help from heaven, but just generically speaking, the way people think that God is still sending help from heaven. But to be able to know, right, that the send from heaven was the Son, obviously. It was Jesus that he was sending from heaven to save David. It says he reproaches, the Lord reproaches the one who would swallow me up. God shall send forth his mercy and his truth. The really cool thing there is says, God shall send forth his mercy and truth. That is what the Lord sent, right? In John chapter 1, the Lord says that grace and truth came through Jesus Christ, right? That's really what he's saying, is God shall send forth his mercy and truth, right? His grace and truth the Lord will send forth. So all of that obviously is just the beautiful thing to just understand there, right? David has a thing on his mind, right? But he's leaving. He goes into a cave running from Saul, running from the king of his country, right, that's trying to kill him, right? And yet he says, in the middle of that, he speaks here with such assurance and says, "For the Lord will send from heaven and save me. God shall send forth his mercy and his truth." Like, you know, he's not just talking about some one-time help. What does truth have to do with his one-time help, right? The Lord will send truth, right? So you know that he's taught, this is just a prophecy of the Messiah. He said, "God shall send forth his mercy and truth, his grace and truth that came in Jesus Christ," right? Verse number 4 says, "For my soul is among lions. I lie among the sons of men who are set on fire." Now, the interesting thing there is, you are following. That's awesome, Andre. Could you switch to the literal translation? Do we have that one? The LT? It's a literal translation. Let's see. Yeah. So keep that there, but let me just read to you again. The way, I don't know if the King James reads like this also, it probably does, but it says, "My soul is among lions. I lie among the sons of men who are set on fire." But that's not really what this says. It says, "My soul is in the midst of lions." It says, "I lie down among flames, sons of men." So what it seems to be, and I don't understand what it all means, but you do see that there is a reference when he says lions and sons of men, that there's some kind of a reference to lions and sons of men and to the word flames, because at least the way he literally translates it here, which again, I don't want to draw too much attention to it because I don't know what flames means, but it appears to be that it has some kind of reference between lions and sons of men that flames do. But in the New King James, it says, "who are set on fire," but it doesn't appear like it's a different thing or a different action. It looks like it's just talking about the same thing, lions and sons of men. But in other words, he's saying he lies among carnal men. He lies, he's among or surrounded by men that think carnally, that act carnally, that do carnal things, right? That react fleshly and act fleshly, right? It says, and this is also speaking about their words, whose teeth are spears and arrows and their tongue a sharp sword, right? The things that they speak about David, the things that they say to David, right? The whatever, whether it be lies or threats or whatever, right? Verse number 5 says, and then he regardless of the fact that he's saying, you know, he's among lions, right? He's among the sons of men. He says, be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be above all the earth. Now, some of these words are italicized, so I think if I take those italics out, it says, be exalted, O God, above the heavens, your glory above all the earth. The cool thing is there that what it makes you think of, right? So he's prophesying about the Lord to come, that the Lord shall send salvation from heaven. But then it made me think of Ephesians 1, where the Lord says that he is above all principality, power, dominion, and every name that is named. So he's speaking about the things that men are speaking to him and against him and, you know, the threats or whatever. And then it comes to his mind when he says that, right? But you, Lord, you're above everything, right? He said, you're exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be above all the earth. And then in verse number 6, he says, and obviously the caveat to that is it's not just him that is set above these things, but we are also set above the sons of men, right? We are seated with him in heavenly places, right? Up in this, and that place doesn't change. It's still above all principality, power, dominion, and every name that is named. It's the same place, right? Just I think sometimes we get caught, well, why doesn't it say that we're above all principality, power, and dominion? But that's not important. He had you behold the glory of the Lord, where he's seated in a place of honor, right, and majesty and authority. And then it says, you're seated with him, right? That's clear enough for me, right? I didn't have to hear the Lord say the same thing, and you also are above all principality, power, and dominion, because that's the point being made about Jesus. And if it's made about Jesus and we behold his glory, it's being made about us. In verse number 16, it says, they have prepared a net for my steps, right, to trap him. They have prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down. They have dug a pit before me into the midst of it. They themselves have fallen, right? So it's just a cool thing to see that when men look to entrap you, when men look to do devious things against you, when men look to cheat you, right, that he says they'll fall into their own trap, right? They'll fall into their own trap. And then in verse number 7, I love it because he says, my heart is steadfast, O God, my heart is steadfast. I will sing and give praise. So I really stopped there. I don't think even at least this morning that I think about. Yeah, I don't think I went much further. There's only one more verse anyway to that psalm. But I don't know exactly what he means by awake my glory. I mean, to me, my glory, the glory I have is the glory of God that's been given to me. I don't know if there's some reference to that. But the cool thing is that he says in verse number 7 that my heart is steadfast. Like my heart is just stayed on you. So in the middle of all the stuff that he's going through, he just says, Lord, if I look at you, I can see that you're exalted above everything. So, you know, if you're going through things in your body, if you're going through things in your mind, whether they be emotional, physical, whatever the things are. I was just talking to Lindsay today on the very thing and just saying, I said her this one thing. I said, you know, isn't it silly for us to think, right, that the Lord is like, that he's, you know, that he's saddened or that he's affected by weather or that he's affected by circumstances that happen. Like it would almost seem, I could almost look literally what I wrote to her, but the point was it would be silly to think of Jesus in that context, like affected by whatever, you know, that it is anything of this world, that he would be affected or moved by it. But it should be to us just as silly for us to think that of us, that when it happens, that it should be such a weird thing. Like how am I being affected by this? Like it should seem just as strange as it seems to us strange that Jesus would be affected by something. It should be just as strange for us, because if it doesn't affect him, It doesn't have to affect us either. But I think sometimes if you look at things differently and you think, that are not, like, I get why they affect me and I understand why it doesn't affect him, you're kind of separating yourself from the qualities and the glory that the Lord has that he's shared with you. Where if you begin more, again, just beholding the glory of the Lord as in a mirror and being able to see, Lord, you know what? It is really silly to think of yourself that way. We wouldn't think it's so normal when something's affecting our heart, affecting our mind, moved by whatever, concerned or worried about something going on at work or something going on with your kids or something going on in your family. Like it would be silly to think, wow, like Jesus is really moved by this emotionally and he's saddened by a circumstance because he's not sure what to do. That would seem ridiculous for you to ever say that about him. But the more and more that you look at that, like keep looking at him. Keep understanding like, wow, that is ridiculous. I would never think that about you, Lord. Like and it's kind of what's happening here in David's heart, right? He's saying, Lord, but you're exalted above the heavens. You're above all principality, power, and dominion in any of the heavens, right, beneath you. So it's just, he gets to a point where he's basically, the Lord's encouraging him in Jesus, in his son. And I'm sure by the end of this, he's saying, my heart is just on you. You know, he's not even thinking about soul anymore. He's just thinking about my heart just on you, Jesus.
We hope you enjoyed this message from Reformed Church. If you have, please share this with someone else and help us get this uncommon truth out to the world. If you'd like to support this good news, you can do so at reformchurch.com/give. Also on our website, you can take advantage of our free messages, articles, and even full discipleship courses. Start reforming your mind now at reformchurch.com.